Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Hey, Mark, this pandemic is creating an economic crisis. I mean, every day that I turn on the news, I hear about some big corporation restructuring or filing Chapter 11 or just closing their doors.
Right. Almost every day. And certainly, I think we've hit our lowest point now that the economy is starting to bounce back. That being said, there's some businesses that just can't operate. And I know you hate this term because I hate it too. Operate under the new normal.
No, this is not the new normal. No, this cannot be. This has to be a blip. We have to get over it. Cash really is king. And here we, and back in 2007 and 2008, when we had that economic crisis, you know, EB5 came in as the knight in shining armor to save so many projects at that point. That was then. And I think that now we are looking very much at EB5 coming in and saving projects again.
Let's hope so. That would be great.
It certainly would be great. But even projects which are out there, the biggest issue that many projects have is a need to restructure. And we thought, who best but to discuss restructuring of a project, of an EB5 project, than our own Clem Turner.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Mark. Hello, Mona. It's a pleasure to be on the podcast again.
Yes, again. This is Clem Turner's third time on the show. The first time was about 4 years ago. We were talking about buying, selling, and particularly renting regional centers. And in fact, we just referenced that episode last week. I know a lot's changed, but the concept's still relevant. And last year, you came on and talked about selling your EB5 project.
Mm-hmm.
And we're honored to have you on today to talk about restructuring your EB5 offering in the midst of COVID.
Yeah, well, thanks for that. And if I may, Mona, if it's okay, I think harking back to 4 years ago, I think a point can be made that, you know, the more things change, the more things stay the same. And we had the incredible collapse of our economy in 2008. Banks weren't lending. Projects were in danger. And EB5 indeed was a knight in shining armor for a lot of those projects. And, you know, that's about when I got into EB5, you know, I know I'm a relative novice compared to you, Mona, but I found EB5 during those times, and I can only be struck by the parallels to that time and now. And, you know, EB5 is incredibly well positioned as a program to help some of these newer businesses that are coming up that are cash strapped and looking for investors.
Well, they're looking for financing, actually. They're not even getting financing. But, you know, EB5 could be a source, an excellent source to help troubled businesses, but they need to change some of the rules or at least adapt some of those rules so that current projects can utilize it. Because perhaps many of them will not be able to show a 2-year deficit and maybe only a few months deficit because of COVID.
Right. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
2 years deficit is required for a troubled business. And for any of our listeners, a troubled business is when a person comes in and saves a business and saves the job. So they're not creating new jobs. They're actually saving the existing jobs. But there are certain rules and regulations that USCIS do require for it to be termed and defined as a troubled business.
Right. And in addition to troubled businesses, because that's definitely the case, there's also newer businesses, businesses launching, or businesses that have been around for a while that aren't necessarily troubled, but have kind of maxed out with respect to what they can do organically. And, you know, a $900,000 cash infusion would give them a shot in the arm to ramp things up and go to the next level and create many, many more than 10 jobs.
That's interesting, Clem. Do you have any examples?
I do, as a matter of fact. Just this past month, I have spoken to the owner of an environmental cleaning business who has seen their business prospects skyrocket, you know, under COVID, and could definitely use a cash infusion to ramp up, buy new equipment, hire new people, and take advantage of the opportunity that COVID has handed him. I've also spoken to the owner of a business that has developed some really fascinating, interesting distance collaboration software. Think of it as a combination of Zoom and Dropbox, and Google Docs, kind of all wrapped up into one integrative package that could be huge as companies adjust to working remotely.
We've discussed technology and tech projects on this podcast quite a lot. That we have seen a huge uptick in tech projects.
Yeah. In addition to those other two businesses, I talked to somebody that wants to launch, I'll frame it as a mini Amazon. A way for people to go online. I've actually spoken to two people with that business model. So people can go online, shop for products, and they show up at their doorstep. There are definitely businesses that are structured very favorably to what COVID is forcing us all to do right now.
You know, that brings me to the point. I know we're going to talk about restructuring in a moment, Mark. But the interesting thing, and again, this has been brought up again and again, is that we are moving a little away from real estate with EB-5. We're looking at EB-5 for businesses, which is something that I really am in favor of.
Yeah, you have been a strong advocate for EB-5 for businesses, even before this whole COVID thing.
I have also. With the rise of India's participation in EB-5 and the dwindling participation of China, you get a lot more EB-5 investors who are tech savvy.
Yeah.
You tend to see investors from India with more of an understanding for technology, without a fear of investing in technology, and with a genuine understanding of the technology market than what you had in China. I'm obviously speaking generally, of course.
But
I think that's facilitated that. And I had expected to see more tech deals coming into EB-5, when China went into retrogression, and that's been slow to happen, but I think that it is happening.
I think it's going to be more. As we move forward and we get back on track and EB-5 investors do come back into the mold, I think you are going to see more.
Yeah. The other huge advantage that businesses have that real estate projects don't is that real estate projects can't move.
Yeah.
A real estate project on the corner of First and Vine is on First and Vine. And if it's not a TEA, then EB-5 isn't going to work.
Right. Right.
A business can move from a non-TEA area into a TEA area and create jobs in that area.
Yep.
Which
most tech jobs, most tech companies can do. But you try moving the Four Seasons Hotel.
Right, exactly.
All right. We're here to discuss corporate restructuring, or rather, EB-5, restructuring in EB-5. This is something which we are seeing a lot of. I know you have been very, very busy with corporate restructuring. But before we go into it, I just want to explain a little bit to our audience. Then they probably are a little confused as to the actual structuring that goes on in EB-5. What is a typical structure? Because corporate restructuring happens only once a company is experiencing significant problems, is in financial jeopardy, and they'll have to internally restructure in order to survive. But how is that relevant in EB-5?
Right. I think we should clarify that. That's a great point to make. We aren't actually restructuring the corporation as such, assuming we're talking about a typical EB-5 real estate deal where, money went into an NCE and that NCE made a loan into an underlying real estate project. What we're restructuring is the debt associated with that project.
Right.
And in most typical EB-5 deals, there is a senior lender,
right,
and the EB-5 is in a mezzanine or subordinated position. So the owners of that real estate project find themselves in a situation where they can no longer service their debt. Their first conversation is obviously to their senior lender. And then their second conversation is obviously with their EB-5 unsubordinated lender. In the majority of cases, the company is going to need both of those lenders to reach an agreement with respect to the new debt terms, or it isn't going to be worthwhile to the company to just negotiate one.
Right.
If you take care of the senior, but you still can't pay your EB-5, that you're still going out of business. Yeah. Go ahead, Mona. Sorry.
No, I did want to point out, though, that this is not something which is new or unique to COVID, that restructuring your debt model has been there forever, really.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. If you would bear with me, though, I was writing a notice to some EB-5 investors about a hotel project that was facing difficulty. And I came across some very, very frightening statistics with respect to the hotel industry. And, you know, since a lot of hotels have been financed with EB-5 capital, I'm sure this is a problem that's going to hit many EB-5 projects. But as of June 24th, so maybe a couple of weeks ago, 6 out of 10 open hotel rooms were empty. The U.S. hotel market has already lost more than $38 billion in room revenue.
Wow.
With U.S. hotels currently on pace to lose up to $400 million in room revenue per day based on our current occupancy rates and trends. And this is from a hospitality data analytics company that's named STR, that a lot of hospitality people know. It's one of the leading ones. Hotel revenue projecting losses of 57.5% for the year. So they're going to lose, you know, almost 60% of their revenue.
This is lost revenue. It's not something that will come back again later. Like it's not delayed revenue, so to speak.
Yes, exactly. Here's another fact. And then I'll stop. I'll switch this back to the EB-5 podcast and the hotels podcast. But STR reported in April that U.S. hotel operating profits fell by 117% compared to last year.
Is this countrywide or worldwide?
Yes,
or?
Countrywide.
Right. US. So it's not specifically, you know, the West Coast or the East Coast or anything?
No. You can find those numbers online. There is a hospitality trade association that breaks COVID impacts down by region. And that is even more sobering for certain regions. But hotels are suffering everywhere. And the restructuring that I'm looking at involves hospitality franchises that received EB-5 money.
So in such a situation, say we have an EB-5 project with two debts, one to their senior lender and a second one to their EB-5. Are they allowed to just change? Would you have to go back? Who do you have to speak to? Whose permission do you require to change
it? Right, exactly. Most, I have to say most, because unfortunately, I did not draft every single EB-5 contract in the world.
But 90%.
Right, exactly. I have drafted my fair share, no doubt. But I think there are probably 10 firms that do, I would say, most of the EB-5, maybe 80% of it. And I think for the most part, all of us have structured EB-5 deals that give the, I'll say, the controller of the NCE. You know, if the NCE is a partnership, it would be the general partner. If the NCE is an LLC, it would be the manager. But whoever runs the day-to-day operations of the NCE has a lot of power under typical EB-5 corporate documents. Those documents would give that manager or general partner the ability to make the call on how to restructure the debt, as long as that owner follows your standard guidelines with respect to how to treat investors in a business entity. So the manager can't breach a fiduciary duty. He can't commit fraud. He can't misrepresent facts. He can't misappropriate funds, you know, all of the things that you would think. And so in a restructuring, you know, it definitely behooves that manager to be transparent, be forthcoming, give notice to the EB-5 investors and explain to them what's going on. And he also should take all steps to meet his fiduciary obligations to those investors, with their first and foremost one being preserving their immigration intent.
Yeah, that is very important. But we have seen some deals recently where the original deal was 5-year repayment with a 2-year add-on. And of course, mm-hmm. most projects you use that 2-year add-on. But instead of it now being a 7-year payback, the restructuring has changed it to a 9-to-12-year payback.
Yes, I've seen that as well. And these are things that the manager has the right to do by virtue of, you know, let's just assume it's a standard EB-5 deal and it's standard EB-5 documents. the controller of the NCE would have the right to do that. But the question is how you go about doing that and minimizing the chances that you'll face litigation as a result of it.
Well,
stay within your power as the manager, you know, not doing anything.
But Clem, do EB-5 investors have any rights? In this respect, they don't. Because if it's an at-risk investment and the manager has decided that they have no choice but to extend for another 4 years before they get paid back, an EB-5 investor can't do anything.
That's true in your standard situation. And it really all goes back to fiduciary duties. Hmm. Managers have a duty of loyalty and a duty of care. And the duty of loyalty requires that they put the interests of the EB-5 investors ahead of their own. You know, they can't self-deal. They can't enrich themselves to the detriment of the EB-5 investors. And the duty of care just requires that they, you know, research and make informed decisions. You know, they can't just willy-nilly arrive at decisions. You know, they've got to have rational reasons. So
that's an excellent reminder, because mm-hmm. so many regional centers are managers of the NCE that mm-hmm. this is really, really important. And of course, not only that, we deal with a lot, and I know you deal with a lot of projects where the regional center is the project.
Right. You know,
so that's where this whole duty really makes a huge difference. And so many times there really is a conflict.
Yeah. And to speak to your question as to how a lawsuit would arise, a lawsuit would arise in the instance where a debt was restructured from the 7-year term to, let's say, a 10-year term, not because of COVID, not because of some external force that is requiring this, or, you know, the borrower is going to go out of business, you know, and obviously if the borrower goes out of business, that's very bad for the investor's immigration intent. So, yeah. You know, the EB-5, the regional center, let's say regional center. The regional center is very interested in making sure the business survives. It's not going to come about in that situation where the manager is acting in a manner that they think is warranted and they ultimately think is best for the investors. A lawsuit would happen if the debt was restructured because it was better economically for the regional center and there was a profit motive involved.
Right.
And it wasn't about preserving the project. It was about squeezing the EB-5 investors and holding on to their money for longer than they originally agreed, you know, really just because they felt like it, because they wanted to make a profit or some other profit maximizing motive instead of, you know, a business saving motive.
Right.
Yeah.
We had this situation where mm-hmm. a company came to us asking us to restructure or advise them on the restructuring of their debt to the regional center and subsequently to the EB-5 investors. It was a hotel. The hotel uh-huh. was not making any money. The hotel, it wasn't saying that they're actually at the 5 or 6 year period where they had to stop making paybacks and mm-hmm. they weren't able to pay back in full, but they were offering the manager, because they didn't have direct access to the investors. And this is often what happens. They mm-hmm. were saying, look, we would rather take the risk now of paying you guys off, but instead of you getting everybody getting 500 back, would you accept 350 back? And take that as opposed to keeping on the struggle. And perhaps after 2 years, we wouldn't have the money even to pay 350 back. Mm-hmm. And in such a situation, what would the manager have to do? Would they have to go back to each investor and ask them, or would they be able to take the decision themselves?
Well, I think the manager would have the right under typical EB-5 documents to make a determination in that instance. But I feel like that would be a dangerous thing to do without at least polling the EB-5 investors and seeing what the majority of them would opt to do.
Right.
Because no matter what you do as a manager in that situation, you're going to annoy somebody. You know, if you take the 350 now, there'll be people who are annoyed that they lost $150,000. If you say no, and 2 years from now, there's nothing, you're going to have people who are annoyed and say, well, why didn't you take the 350?
Right.
Obviously, hindsight is always 20/20. So the manager has to inoculate himself to a negligence lawsuit or to a lawsuit claiming that he breached fiduciary duty and either was careless in the decision that he reached, thereby breaching the duty of care, or you could say that postponing it wasn't in the investor's best interest, so it was a breach of the duty of loyalty. However it's framed, the manager could see a lawsuit. So the best course of action for him or her to do in that case, even though they may have the power to make a decision, I would advise that client that they should just draft the notice, describe the situation to the EB-5 investors, send it out to them, and take their temperature.
Right. Excellent advice. Well, you need to do that under the securities laws anyway.
If you're asking investors to make a decision with respect to a particular corporate course of action, you do have to give them, you know, all the material facts. You have to give them the proper disclosures. You have to give the investors the information upon which to make the decision, you know, if you go that route.
Yeah.
You know, if you rely on your corporate power and make the decision for them, you're within your rights to do that as a corporate manager. But as I said, you know, if people aren't happy with your decision, they could very easily find a lawyer who's willing to see you over it with the benefit of 2020 hindsight.
Right, right. So we have two types of restructuring. We have the financial restructuring, which we've discussed, and then there's the organizational restructuring. Mm-hmm. And that could also mean downsizing and perhaps, you know, lots of furloughs.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And there, I would think your expertise, Mona, is probably more in play than mine, because it relates to the job creation, right? And what happens in that situation. You've spent the money.
Well, if you've created the position, once the position's created, it doesn't disappear. That's USCIS's own guidelines.
Okay.
And so if you have to lose the position because you have to furlough employees, that should not affect the EB-5 if the position's already been created. Now, if the positions haven't been created and now suddenly, you know, say, for example, we have a direct project and the direct project was easily going to create 15 jobs for one person. And now they can really only afford 4.5. Now that's a different story.
Right. But you obviously hope that by the time the A-29s are filed, they've found a way to create 6 more jobs to get that investor the job creation threshold that they need. But that's definitely, you know.
Yeah, but the regulations help. The regulations help because you are given that additional time if you can show reasonableness. And you can show that, yeah, there is something that is in the horizon that would give you the uptick. How about Chapter 11 restructuring, Clem? I know you're not really a bankruptcy lawyer, but it is a form of bankruptcy, but it involves reorganization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Chapter 11 refinancing from a corporate perspective is a great opportunity for businesses to require their creditors to work with them. And in the vast majority of cases, I believe, businesses come out of Chapter 11 stronger than when they went into it. So it can be a great relief and a stabilizing force to help businesses survive. From the point of view of a typical regional center deal, I would think the immigration intent of the investors would still be fine in a Chapter 11 situation because they've invested in the NCE.
Right.
You know, the NCE isn't restructuring. And so I would suspect, but again, this is your expertise more than mine, but I would suspect the immigration would be fine. If it were a direct deal restructuring, I would think that might be more problematic.
You would.
Especially if the, oh yeah, well, I'll let you speak to it.
No, you would. But again, it's the same principles. If the positions have been created, I don't think the Chapter 11 would make any difference. But do you note at all how the CARES Act, which has raised the debt limit, has that impacted this at all?
Well, I think that the CARES Act, to the extent it's made filing bankruptcy that much easier, you know, would be helpful for projects to use that tool to help them restructure.
Yeah, well, the CARES Act, which really came in earlier this year, it did raise the Chapter 11 debt limit to $7.5 million. But I think, Clem, what you might be seeing is perhaps people wanting to restructure because of the interest rates being lowered to, you know, crazy amounts, what, 0% to 0.25%?
Yes, exactly. And again, it really goes to the point I was making as far as the motivation for that restructuring. You know, the EB-5 loan documents, they're a deal. You know, they're baked and cooked. They're signed by everybody. And Regional Center has raised money promising a certain interest rate, promising a return. If a restructuring is necessary for a business reason, I think that the owner of a regional center would have a much easier time fighting off a challenge to that restructuring and agreeing to change the interest rate, agreeing to push the term back, you know, agreeing to things that are against the economic interest of the regional center and against the economic interest of the investors in order to preserve the business and thus preserve the immigration intent of the regional center and the immigration desires of the EB-5 investors. But a restructuring just because interest rates are low, I think that would work with the senior lender, you know, and I think that's a valid thing to attempt. Or, you know, go out and find another lender and take out the first lender and thereby lower your debt costs. But to restructure an EB-5 deal just because you can, just because interest rates are lower, I would think that that would probably not be okay. And I think investors would rightfully be annoyed.
Right. But also companies need to consider whether the benefits of restructuring outweigh the costs, because aren't right. there tons of costs involved?
There's a lot of legal cost involved, yes.
Not your fees.
Not my fees, fortunately or unfortunately, depending on your perspective. But bank loan restructuring is, well, it can be, you know, very expensive, depending on how much debt you have.
One final point that has just emerged, which I think is perhaps one of these silver lining points, that we have seen private equity come in now because banks aren't giving money. And people are reaching out to private equity, and private equity is there.
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of deals to be made. You led the podcast saying cash is king. Yeah. Cash was king in 2008, and it's king in 2020. There are a lot of very solid companies with great business plans that are unstable now because of COVID. But the expectation is that we will get past this someday, and those companies are going to rebound. But to the extent they face difficulties now, a controlling stake in a company like that can be had for relatively inexpensively. And you see private equity definitely taking advantage of that situation to the extent the VCs have cash. One other point I want to make, the ability of regional centers and project owners to restructure is indicative of one of the great benefits of EB-5 capital for businesses generally.
Yeah, I agree.
EB-5 investors are not typical shareholders who really just have a bottom line profit motive and just want to see growth in the business. And if the business has a downturn, you know, they're looking for the exit. An EB-5 investor is a very patient investor and wants the business to succeed because it's critical to their immigration desire. So the EB-5 investors I have seen are more genuinely interested in making sure the business survives and, you know, are willing to make concessions to the extent, you know, their immigration benefit hasn't been secured yet, which should cause businesses, I would think, to give EB-5 capital a long, hard look.
Yep. I totally agree. I think that you're spot on with what you said.
Especially now, given that the EB-5 investor really isn't concerned with valuations. You know, their investment is set at $900,000. And so the valuation conversation and the impact of COVID and what the company may be like in 5 years or 10 years or now, that whole conversation is planted with EB-5. And as I said, makes an EB-5 investor a pretty good investor to have.
Totally agree with you, Clem. So many projects that don't have shareholders that are restrained by USCIS regulations, they can be real troublemakers in any kind of restructuring.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Mona. That could potentially stop the successful restructuring of a project in the midst of a pandemic. Well, Clem Turner, thank you so much for coming back on EB-5 Investment Voice 3 times in 4 years. Let's do this again soon.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you for being with us today on EB-5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.